that came in, there was already a party.
All right. Good morning, everybody. This meeting of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is being recorded. It's 8:30 a.m. on February 25th, 2025. Dr. Bustillo, after you call the meeting to order, we'll do a roll call of the board members and staff and proceed with the reading of the board's mission statement.
Welcome, everyone. I'd like to call the February 25th, 2025 Arizona Physical Therapy Board meeting to order.
Dr. Bustillo, I apologize. I ask your indulgence. I'm trying to eliminate this bot. At this time, I need to pause for a second. Perhaps, Mr. Harris, there is an individual who has joined the meeting who is utilizing an AI bot that the state of Arizona has identified as not acceptable in public meetings. At this time, and I can't quite figure out how to get it to stop, unless perhaps the individual is on this call and can simply log in, or perhaps log in through an anonymous login as opposed to his personal login.
Is it the James's note taker?
Yes.
Otter.ai?
Yes.
Okay.
So I just tried to log in and delete it. So I just deleted my account actually. So it shouldn't be joining anymore. I don't know what else to do about that, but what I can try to do is log in with another email address and see if that'll work.
That might, because I think it might be hooked to your email address.
Oh, it was just
removed. I think it just left the building.
Did it? Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much.
Fantastic. Thank you. I apologize for the delay. Sure. Okay. We are, I'm sorry, Dr. Bustillo, did you call the meeting to order?
I did.
Okay. Thank you. I will now do a roll call, and based on last meeting's votes, it's going to be out of order. So we'll see how many times Judy can mess this up. Dr. Bustillo.
Here.
Mr. Leone.
Here.
Dr. Hike.
Here.
Mr. Greer.
Here.
Mr. Barton.
Here.
Dr. King.
Here.
And board staff, Ms. Crowley.
Here.
Ms. Bryant.
Here.
Ms. Richardson.
Present.
Dr. Sinish.
Here.
My name is Judy Chepius, and we are also joined by Mr. Mark Harris, our Assistant Attorney General.
Morning.
And I do believe Mr. Greer has volunteered to read the mission statement this morning.
Thought I was assigned, but
we term that voluntold.
The mission of the Arizona Board of Physical Therapy is to protect the public from the incompetent, unprofessional, and unlawful practice of physical therapy. The Arizona Physical Therapy Practice Act establishes the standard for the practice of physical therapy, continuing competence and testing, and defines the scope and limitations of practice. The board licensed qualified applicants as physical therapists and physical therapist assistants and receives, investigates, and adjudicates complaints against licensees.
Thank you very much. We will move on here to consent to approve the minutes from the January 28th, 2025 regular session, executive session A, executive session B, and executive session C minutes. Are there any changes that need to happen?
I move that we approve the minutes as outlined on the agenda with the dates in the meetings.
Second.
I'm sorry, who seconded that?
Giovanni.
Giovanni.
Thank you. Okay. Are you ready for the vote?
Yes.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda consisting of the regular session and executive sessions A, B, and C meeting minutes from the January 28th, 2025 board meeting. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hype?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Great. Okay, we'll move on to applicants requesting ADA accommodations. Abigail Medina, is she on the call? Ms. Medina?
I don't see her listed, but there are a variety of individuals with just a phone number. So
do you want to give us a summary and then we can decide if
I can do that. So the board was provided with the application and the ADA request from Ms. Abigail Medina. She has previously completed the NPT exam two times, but those attempts have been unsuccessful. Neither attempt included accommodation, and she is now requesting the accommodation of time and a half. So the board is requested to review the information provided to determine whether or not she should be granted accommodations for the National Physical Therapy exam and or the Arizona Jurisprudence exam. If the board approves the request, Ms. Medina will be allowed to complete the application process by registering and taking the NPTE and the Jurisprudence exam. After that time, should she pass those exams and upon completion of the full application process, including transcripts, board staff would then finally process her application. So the matter's for your review.
Do we feel like we want to talk with her, or do we feel that we can work this one out?
I personally feel comfortable making a decision just based on the information that she sent.
Do you have a motion?
I would move to approve.
I'll second that.
Any discussion?
Just to make a record for our motion, I'm a little concerned because I would like to ask her some questions, but I do see when I look at the record and I look at the disability she is complaining of, it does look like she mentions that it affects her ability to sit for more than 10 minutes at a time. It looks like she requires assistance to be able to get up and use the restroom because of the pregnancy going on late. And it looks like assuming that she gives birth relatively before the care, there will be some medical needs as well that she'll need to take care of. And so based on those needs, I think it appears to me that it probably affects a major life function and affects her access to the exam, and that would be the basis for my vote.
I concur with Mr. Barton. I was a little scared when I saw this. I was like, what are we going to do? But this appears to be a pretty easy case as far as ADA accommodations go. So I would approve the motion as well.
I agree as well. I feel like this is a transient issue. And for this particular exam, it seems to be a reasonable request.
And
any further discussion? I think we're ready, Judy.
Okay. And just for the record, you're reviewing this based on the complications reported in this circumstance, not the pregnancy itself, correct?
Correct.
Yes.
Thank you. So it's been moved and seconded to approve Abigail Medina's ADA accommodation request for additional time and a half. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Height?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
So we'll move on to review, consideration, and possible action regarding approving the supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising therapist proposed by Sakshi Shah.
So Ms. Shah was found to be substantially equivalent at the board's December 17th, 2024 meeting and was issued a supervised clinical practice period of 500 hours. Ms. Shah submitted an agreement for a supervised clinical practice period for the board's approval, for the board's review and potential approval. The primary supervisor would be Brianna LaBelle, PT, and the secondary supervisor submitted is William Whitlock, PT. The facility is Spooner and Ocotillo, which is in Chandler. So the board is requested to review the information to determine the appropriateness of the facility and the primary and secondary supervisors so Ms. Shaw can move forward with her clinical practice period.
I move that we approve the primary and secondary clinical supervisors for her supervised clinical practice.
Second.
And you're approving the facility as well, correct?
Correct.
That's better. Mm-hmm. All right. Are you ready for that vote?
Yes.
Okay. It's been moved and seconded to approve Sakshi Shah's supervised clinical practice period facility and supervising physical therapists for her supervised clinical practice period. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Pike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes. Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
Thank you. That motion passes.
Okay. We will move on to the consent agenda, which includes George Engelich and Rebecca Trost.
Rebecca's present.
I'll move that we approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Any other discussion?
So it's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. That's items 5A and 5C. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Height?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes. So those of you on the consent agenda, Mr. Engelich and Ms. Trost, the board has approved both of your requests, so board staff will be reaching out. You are more than welcome to remain on the meeting and listen in, but you are not required to do so.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We would like to look at ordering the agenda to number 7 next, the informal hearing. Case 2406 with Shiloh Evans. Is she present?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I do have a script that we need to read for this. We will move to the agenda items for informal hearing. This is a reminder that the board meeting is being recorded. This is case number 2406, Shiloh Evans, PTA. We'll have Ms. Chepius do a roll call, we'll respond with a name and our positions.
Dr. Bastillo?
Here, board chair.
Mr. Leone?
Giovanni Leone, professional member, board vice president.
Dr. Hike?
John Hike, secretary.
Mr. Greer?
Joshua Greer, public member.
Mr. Barton?
Joshua Barton, public member.
Dr. King?
Kelly King, professional member.
Ms. Evans, please introduce yourself and any counsel if you have that present with you.
I'm Shiloh Evans, PTA, and I don't, it's just me.
This interview is being held pursuant to ARS 32-2046. The purpose of an informal hearing is to hear relevant facts by way of testimony and exhibits to determine if a violation of any of the board's statutes or rules have occurred. If the board finds a violation, it may take any of the following actions. Issue a decree of censure, place restrictions on a licensee's practice, issue a civil penalty not to exceed $500, issue any other disciplinary actions, issue a non-disciplinary order requiring completion of specific continuing education. If the board finds the violation or possible violation of statute or rule is not sufficiently serious to warrant action, the board may issue a non-disciplinary advisory letter. If the board finds that there was no violation of board statutes or rule, the case may be dismissed. If the board finds that the violation warrants potential suspension or revocation of license, the board shall vote the matter to a formal hearing. If the board finds that the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority, the board shall vote on that referral. We'll swear in the witnesses, please.
Ms. Richardson and Ms. Evans, if you will raise your right hand, I will call your name for a response. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God? Ms. Richardson?
I do.
Ms. Evans?
I do.
Thank you.
And then we'll have the investigator give us a brief overview.
Thank you, Dr. Bastillo. Good morning, members of the board and Ms. Evans. The summary of 2406 is that Ms. Evans was arrested and charged with two counts of DUI on or about February 10th of 2024. The board received this information via the Arizona Department of Public Service fingerprint clearance notification letter. She was contacted for additional information in May of 2024. And at that time, she states she was not charged when she was arrested, that it was not a final judgment, and that was the reason she did not report to the board, according to the 10-day regulatory requirement. She provided no other details about the nature of the events leading up to her arrest, circumstances surrounding the event, nor any additional information regarding her sobriety. She subsequently submitted a certificate of completion for 16 hours of alcohol education in June of 2024. She also stated at that time that she was attempting to get the charges dismissed. Her blood alcohol level was 0.12 at the time of her arrest, and she stated that this was her first arrest, first DUI arrest. You heard the matter as an initial review on 6/25 of 24. She was not present during that review. You then moved the matter to an informal hearing, which was scheduled for August 27th of 24. But Ms. Evans requested a continuance as she was unavailable. An informal hearing was held on 10/1/24, and you voted to continue the matter pending the adjudication of the court case against her. On 12/12/24, she pled guilty to one count of DUI. The other count was dismissed, as was the reckless driving count. At that time, she provided a copy of her plea agreement, but she provided no other information. She was reminded several times to provide any additional information and documents to board staff for the board to consider in the matter as it moved forward to the informal hearing. The informal hearing was scheduled for the January 25th meeting, but Ms. Evans again requested it be continued to the February meeting because of her work schedule. Then yesterday at 12:20, she submitted documents consisting of her plea agreement, which included $1,500 in fines, a 10-day jail sentence with all but one day suspended for credits for time served, a court-ordered drug and alcohol screening, and MAD victim impact panel. She also submitted certificates for traffic survival school, which was completed January 12th of 2025, and a MAD victim impact panel completed February 16th of 2025. She also submitted her first payment toward the balance of her fine. I don't believe there was any documentation of her completing a drug and alcohol screen. And she also provided no written statements other than the original statement we received back in May of 2024. As it relates to her maintaining her sobriety or any other avenues she's pursuing to maintain her sobriety. At the end of the day, she didn't report the charges to the board within the 10-day regulatory requirements, so she's been cited for the following violation, ARS 32-3208, mandatory reporting requirements. This case is for your review.
Thank you. Ms. Evans, would you like to make a statement?
I would, but just first of all, first and foremost, I did submit the certification when I did the drug and alcohol course. I sent that previously. And then my blood alcohol level was 0.08. I wasn't aware that I needed to submit another statement or, you know, just kind of go into the matters deeper. I wasn't aware I needed to do that, and I thought that's what this meeting was for, you know, that I can, you know, let you know my plan and what's going on, and I'm willing to share as much information as you feel like you need. As I've stated before, I'm very apologetic that I overlooked the fact that at the time when I was arrested that I needed to report it within 10 days. I do admit that I overlooked that. This was a huge mistake. It was, you know, I was very close to my home at the time. It was just a huge mistake. And I've learned a lot through this that, you know, even if you have a couple drinks, you can be impaired. And in the state of Arizona, even if you're below 0.08, you can still be arrested for a DUI. And you know, this was a big learning experience for me. And I haven't drank and drove since then, not even one drink. And I plan to continue that. And I just also want to say that this in no way affects my patient care. The only thing that, you know, I did do is that I overlooked the fact that I needed to report it. And I wish that I would have known, but in my head I was thinking, okay, there was a possibility for me to get this charge dismissed, and that's what I was going for. Unfortunately, I didn't want to go to trial and do that whole thing, so I just agreed and said, okay, let me just deal with the consequences and learn from it, move on. And I can also say I've spent a lot of money in this, I've been through a lot, and I've definitely learned my lesson.
Are you willing to answer questions from the board members?
Yes.
Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Evans?
I do. Ms. Evans, one of the pieces that, that was suggested to be submitted was the result of an alcohol or drug addiction screening. Have you been evaluated by a health professional for drug and alcohol addiction?
No. I took the course, and with the course there's questions, and I don't believe that that's necessary, but I understand your question.
Thank you.
And I can just say I don't foresee this as an issue. It's nothing that's going to ever happen again. I can promise that.
Thank you.
So this is Dr. Bustia. I guess my question is, you know, what type of support do you have to help help ensure that this is not going to happen again?
Well, I'm a mom, and that's enough motivation for me that I need to do right. And for myself and my kids, I just, my plan is to not drink and drive ever again. That's my new rule. I'm not going to even have one drink and drive. That's my new rule. So if I go to dinner, I'm not going to drink, or if I plan to drink, I'm going to get an Uber or have somebody give me a ride. And that's my plan.
It's Dr. King. Do you have any experiences with that already? Have you utilized Uber or friends to take you home after having a drink went out with family or friends?
I honestly haven't been going out in a really long time. So not really, but if I have like a couple, if I've had a couple drinks at home, I just don't drive, or I have my friend or my boyfriend drive.
Any other questions? Is there a closing statement that you'd like to make, Ms. Evans?
I mean, I think I've said everything that I've needed to say. I just want to reiterate that I've truly learned through this, and it was a big mistake, and I'm really embarrassed about it.
Okay, this will conclude the interview and questions process of the hearing. And at this time, the board will deliberate, and we ask that no further questions or comments from the licensee be made while the deliberation is going forward. And so we need to look at findings of fact.
Dr. Bustillo, I would move that we issue an advisory letter to Ms. Evans that she should be aware of the 10-day reporting period. That's my motion.
Second.
Any further discussion? Okay, I think we're ready for that vote.
It's been moved and seconded to, in case 2406 Shiloh Evans PTA, to issue an advisory letter reminding Ms. Evans of her reporting requirements pursuant to ARS 323208. Dr. Bustillo.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton. Mr. Barton, you're muted.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Thank you. Dr. King. Dr. King, you're muted too.
Yes.
Thank you. That motion passes.
Good luck to you, Ms. Evans. I hope things go well for you.
Thank you.
Okay, and then we will backtrack to number six, our administrative hearings. And then we have a, we need to do the script for this too, Mr. Harris.
You know what? Would it be okay, Madam Chair, members of the board, if we considered 6B first?
Yeah.
And Madam Chair, members of the board, I know that there was a memorandum and a signed consent agreement, but just by way of background, this was scheduled for a formal administrative hearing last month. Ms. Holquin did appear. It was the first time that the board had contact with Ms. Holquin since the investigative interview was held literally years ago. Voted to continue the matter to give the parties an opportunity to see if they could come up with a consent agreement to present to you. We have, if you'd like, I'd be happy to, you know, memorialize the facts. But in essence, the consent agreement that Ms. Holquin has already signed for your review and consideration is for a decree of censure and to retake the jurisprudence exam, I believe, within 90 days. And if you think that that is a acceptable resolution to this matter, I would ask that you consider approving the consent agreement.
Is there any discussion?
I'd move to approve the consent agreement.
I'll second.
Any more discussion? Okay, I think we're ready, Judy.
It's been moved and seconded to accept the signed consent agreement in case 2405, Georgia Holguin, PTA. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hyde?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes. And just for the record, was Ms. Holguin in the call?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Holguin, the consent agreement will be executed and you'll receive a copy of that. And if you have any questions at that time, I'll be happy to address them with you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and then for 6A, do we need to do the whole script then too for this, Mr. Harris?
Madam Chair, members of the board, I do believe that Beth Campbell is also appearing this morning to serve as your IA for this administrative hearing. I do not believe that Mr. Karps will appear, and I would ask Judy or Mindy, is there any way to confirm if he's on the line?
Mr. Karps, are you present? I'm looking simultaneously through the list of attendees.
Yeah. And then, Judy, the folder is still empty. Is that okay, or should there be documents in there at this point yet, or no?
I believe they have to be introduced first. We have to go through the process to determine. So if I understand it correctly, Dr. Bastillo, you're inquiring whether we need to read the script. Ms. Campbell is the board's independent advisor in this case. So Ms. Campbell, if you can please address those questions, that would be wonderful. And then inform me if it's okay to insert the exhibits in this case into the board's folder.
Yeah, I'm assuming that Mr. Harris is ready to proceed with presentation of state's evidence. Is that correct, Mr. Harris?
It is, and I would also waive the reading of the script if, in fact, Mr. Karps is not on the line.
Okay, then bear with me one moment while I place those documents into the board's into the board's folders. I apologize, slight technical difficulty. Okay, the board should now have access to those exhibits.
Thank you.
Great. Members of the board, in view of Mr. Harris's statement that he would like, he's okay with waiving reading of the script, the board may wish to proceed directly to an opening statement by Mr. Harris if he has one. Including whether or not respondent Mr. Karps has filed a answer to the board's complaint notice of hearing.
I think that'd be great.
Yep.
Madam Chair, members of the board, thank you. As far as my opening statement goes, I'll just try to kind of put this case in context. And Mr. Karps is a PTA who currently his license is suspended because he chose not to renew his license while he was the subject of a board investigation. And back in 24, he had entered into an interim consent agreement with you because of some concerns about his ability to safely practice based upon some health issues. This case originally came to you literally 2 years ago at your February 23 meeting for your first review and consideration. And what prompted that was Mr. Karps being charged with criminal trespass in the third degree at the end of December of 2022. Mr. Karps, and we were notified of these charges, not by Mr. Karps, but rather by DPS. So we find out from DPS of these charges. We notify Mr. Karps. He sends us this letter. I'll introduce the letter in a moment as an exhibit to these proceedings. But basically, he was letting us know that he wasn't well, and that prompted the board to offer him the ICA. And that literally was the last time we have heard from Mr. Karps. That's why I didn't think he was going to be present this morning. He has not responded to any of the board's communications in the interim. And as I mentioned, he has chosen not to renew his license. But when you're the subject of a pending complaint, your license just doesn't expire. Again, it goes on suspended status until the board resolves the underlying complaint. All of that information came to you in December, and you remanded it to formal hearing. We issued the complaint notice of hearing, and here we are to, finally bring closure to this matter. With that said, Madam Chair, members of the board, I will only call one witness today, and that will be Mindy Richardson. So at the appropriate time, if you wouldn't mind swearing her in.
Ms. Richardson, raise your right hand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mindy. Can you state your full name for the record?
Melinda Richardson.
And is it okay if I call you Mindy?
Yep.
Mindy, what do you do for the board?
I'm one of the board's investigators.
And what are your responsibilities as a board investigator?
We receive, review complaints. We investigate those complaints and prepare reports for the board's review and consideration.
Are you familiar with the complaint that was initiated against Mr. Karps?
I am.
And just briefly, Mindy, can you tell us the status of his license?
He did not renew his 2024 license renewal, so it was placed in an inactive suspended status.
Okay. And with respect to the complaint, can you just remind us how we found out about his criminal charges?
January of 24, we received notice from Arizona DPS that he had been charged with criminal trespass in the third degree. 23, I'm sorry.
That's okay. And when you became aware of that, what did you do?
I contacted Mr. Karps, asked for information, and he provided a written response.
Mindy, did, based upon his written response, did this matter go before the board at its February 23 meeting?
Yes, it did.
And did you prepare a memo?
I did.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm going to start referring to the state's exhibits. Mindy, can you take a look at State's Exhibit 1 and 2? And is this a copy of the initial memorandum that you prepared, as well as a copy of Mr. Karp's letter?
Let me scroll down. Exhibit 1 is the, I'm confirming, is the memo that I drafted for the board's consideration dated February 15th of 2023. And Exhibit 2 is dated February 15th of 2023, which is Mr. Karp's written response to me in response to my inquiries.
And Mindy, can you just briefly share with us the highlights of his response?
He had indicated the nature of his arrest and then went on to describe some historical perspective related to his mental health and difficulties that he'd had maintaining his mental health, essentially. And that what concerned me was there appeared to be an active issue with his mental health, and I was concerned about his ability to continue practicing as a physical therapist assistant, based on what he provided.
And at that February meeting, after considering the information that you provided, did the board offer Mr. Karps a interim consent agreement not to practice?
Yes, they did.
And he accepted that?
He did.
And is Exhibit 3 a true and correct copy of that agreement?
That is correct.
And up until the time he chose not to renew his license, that ICA was in force and in effect?
Yes, it was.
And that was, April of 23. Let's fast forward to, late 24. You became aware that he chose not to renew his license. Is that correct?
Yes.
And when you became aware of that, what, if anything, did you do?
I brought it forward to Ms. Chepius and determined that we needed to make the board aware of this outstanding issue, and we wanted to make the board aware of it. So we produced a memo to make the board aware of Mr. Karp's status, that he had the ICA and that he had not renewed his license for the 24-26 period.
And that was presented to the board at their December meeting?
Correct.
Was Mr. Karps notified of that meeting?
He was.
Did he appear?
No.
Do you know what the board did?
They then moved. At that point, they voted for formal hearing.
And?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
They moved to a formal hearing.
And since you became aware that he had chosen not to renew his license, did the board try to reach out to him to see what his intent was, whether he wanted to retain his license, things of that nature?
Yes, Ms. Chepius attempted to reach out in multiple ways to try and elicit a response from Mr. Karps without success.
Okay. Mindy, can I have you take a look at State's Exhibit 4 and 5? And is Exhibit 4 a copy of the memorandum that you prepared regarding the licensure update of Mr. Karps that was presented to the board at their December meeting?
That is correct.
And is Exhibit 5 kind of a compilation of the email communications you just referenced Ms. Chepius attempted to send to Mr. Karps regarding this matter?
In addition to some communication, that also includes communication that I had made with Mr. Karp. So both Ms. Chepius and myself were included.
Thank you, Mindy. And Mindy, can I lastly ask you to take a look at Exhibit 6? And is that a copy of the complaint notice of hearing that was issued in this matter?
Yes, it is correct. And it's dated January 13th of 2025.
And are the factual allegations consistent with your testimony this morning?
That's correct.
And Mindy, do you know if it, if Mr. Karp, how Mr. Karp was served a copy of the complaint?
As per Ms. Chepius' practice, she notifies the respondent with an email version. She transmits it by regular mail and also U.S. certified mail.
Since the issuance of the complaint, are you aware of any communications that Mr. Karp has had with board staff?
We have not had any communications from Mr. Karp.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the board, at this time, the state would respectfully request admitting Exhibits 1 through 6 into evidence.
Ms. Bustillo, or I'm sorry, Dr. King, you do have to answer, admit those for the record.
Yes, we should admit those to the record. 1 through 6.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. I have no further questions of Ms. Richardson. And with that, the state would rest. But I don't know if you have any questions for her.
Ms. Richardson or Mr. Harris, either one. He was notified of this via certified mail. Did we get a return receipt saying that he had received that?
I don't believe we have. It's not in the exhibit, but I don't believe we have.
Last page of the state's Exhibit 6 appears to be the certified letter being returned to the board.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, there it is. Yeah. Return to sender. Yep, very last page.
Yeah. So I don't believe that I can't speak to the regular mail. But I don't believe the email bounced back. And
okay.
If you wanted, we could certainly swear Ms. Chepius in, and she might have additional information or clarification on that.
Monica, will you swear me in?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that again?
Will you please swear me in? Answer the board questions.
I don't have the little script.
Just ask her to tell the truth.
Judy, will you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Thank you.
Nice job, Monica.
May I just answer the question? No, the email to Mr. Karps did not bounce back, nor did we receive back his regular mail. We did get the certified mail back. Typically that can happen, even if the individual just simply doesn't pick it up or if they weren't right. able to deliver it and get a signature.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Are there any other questions?
We have a current address for him, I assume.
Okay. Yes, Judy.
Yes, as yes. An address that he provided.
Right.
Thank you.
That's all I have. I'm done asking impertinent questions. So,
Madam Chair, members of the board, with that, I could just move into to my closing. which would simply be, I would just ask that you consider adopting the factual allegations in the complaint notice of hearing as your findings of fact and the notice of charges as your conclusions of law. I hope one of the things that came across in my very abbreviated, you know, presentation is, you know, all the efforts that the board staff does take to work with the licensees, the stakeholders. And it's only when it's not reciprocated do these type of matters come back to you and, you know, the ask being for you to move it forward because it's the only way to get it off the books, so to speak. And, you know, that was what was done here. With respect to the board order, I'll defer to you, but I would ask that you consider, you know, perhaps issuing an order, you know, revoking his license to practice as a physical therapy assistant in the state of Arizona. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to move to accept the findings of fact and conclusions of law as presented.
Second.
Any discussion?
The only discussion I think is worth having is I'd like to also maybe instruct our board staff to maybe ask Mesa Police to do a wellness check on this gentleman. My only concern is that he seems to be completely MIA, and given what we know about his health as of last year, that is a little concerning to me just on a humanitarian basis. But that would be the only thing I would suggest in addition. Otherwise, I completely support it. I don't know if that's possible, but.
So for right now, Mr. Barton, if, I understand your concern. So right now, for the purposes of this motion, if we could focus on the motion to adopt the factual allegations and alleged violations of law as the board's findings of fact and conclusions of law. When the matter concludes at that point, if you have.
I can raise it as a separate motion.
Right. Yeah. Thanks.
Any other discussion? I think we're ready for that, Judy.
Was there a second? Did I?
Yeah, King second.
Okay, thank you.
And that motion was both the factual, the findings of fact and the conclusions of law, correct?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. So Dr. Basile moved, seconded by Dr. King, to adopt the factual allegations and the allegations of unprofessional conduct as its findings of facts and conclusions of law as outlined in the state's complaint and notice of hearing. Dr. Basile.
Yes.
Mr. Leone.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
That motion passes.
Do you want to conclude this, Mr. Barton, or do you want to make your motion?
No. Yeah. So since the motion passed, I would move that we instruct board staff to reach out to Mesa Police Department and request a wellness check at the last known address of the respondent. Okay.
Second.
Any other discussion on that?
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to direct staff to contact the Mesa Police Department to perform a wellness check on, to request a wellness check on Mr. Karps at his last known address. Dr. Basile.
Yes.
Mr. Leon.
Yes.
Dr. Hike.
Yes.
Mr. Greer.
Yes.
Mr. Barton.
Yes.
Dr. King.
Yes.
That motion passes.
I'll move that we revoke Mr. Karp's license as a PTA.
Second.
Any other discussion?
It's been moved and seconded to issue an order of revocation of Mr. Karp's physical therapist assistant license. Dr. Castillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. And board. Thank you, Ms. Campbell, for being here for us.
You are welcome. The board's decision will be reduced to a written order and served on Mr. Karp's, and that will notify him should he choose to avail himself of it, of his further appeal rights.
Thank you, Ms. Campbell.
Thank you.
Okay, so we will move on to number 9, complaints and other disciplinary matters for review, consideration, and action. I have a script for this as well that I will read. This is the time and place scheduled for the board's initial review of complaints. There are 2 initial reviews and 8 preliminary reviews for the board to consider. The matters for everyone's benefit, I will provide a brief summary on how the board conducts its initial reviews. The summary applies to all cases that we will hear today, and I will not repeat it for each case. I will first begin with introductions. My name is Dr. Bustillo. I'm the board's chairperson and professional member. I'll now ask the other board members to introduce themselves.
Giovanni Leone, professional member, vice president.
John Hike, professional member, secretary.
Joshua Greer, public member.
Joshua Barton, public member.
Kelly King, professional member.
Okay, thank you. For those participating in the initial reviews, please be aware that we have read all the materials submitted. If at any time it is necessary to refer to patients, please use initials only. In each case, the board will first hear a brief summary of the investigative report from its staff. Once staff is done, the board will ask the complainant, if present, if they wish to address the board, and then the board will ask the professional, if present, and their attorney, if represented, if they would like to do the same. In order to give everyone the same opportunity to address the board, we ask that those speaking not take time repeating information that the board already has received. You will be given the same amount of time to address the board that it took to present the investigative report, or 5 minutes, whichever is greater. Please keep in mind that this is not the time or place for the complainant and the professional to address each other. The board has a civility policy that prohibits the use of any type of disruptive conduct. Those violating this policy, after being given an opportunity to modify their behavior, will be removed from the meeting room. Once the board concludes its discussion with the parties, it will move into deliberations. While the parties are free to stay and listen to deliberations, we are now discussing the case yourselves, and you and request that you do not interrupt that process. The board's options include, but are not limited to, dismissing the complaint, taking non-disciplinary action such as issuing an advisory letter or order for continuing education, offering the professional a consent agreement, requesting the professional participate in an informal hearing, or remanding the matter to a formal hearing. The board may also determine whether the matter warrants referral to any other agency or authority. Before we call the first case, I want to advise everyone that initial reviews are audio recorded. Accordingly, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speak at a time. Lastly, as a reminder to the board, this is not an informal hearing. If you have a few questions that will help you better understand the case and take action to potentially resolve the case through dismissal, non-disciplinary action, or a consent agreement for either disciplinary or non-disciplinary action, please feel free to ask them. However, if you have a number of substantive questions and or feel the case requires additional investigation or may warrant referral to any other agency or authority, it may be more appropriate to move the case to an informal hearing. And our first case is 2427, Christopher Kuhlman, PTA. Is Mr. Kuhlman on the call?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, now. Okay.
All right. After review of case 2407 at its meeting on December 17th, 2024, the board voted to open this case against Christopher Kuhlman, PTA, citing alleged substandard care, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee. In April of 2024, there was an approximately two-week time frame during which Mr. Kuhlman treated patients without a supervising physical therapist. As the director of rehab at Haven of Green Valley, Mr. Kuhlman sets the patient schedule and determines which patients will be seen by a PT and which will be seen by a PTA each week, rather than a PT delegating aspects of patient care. Potential violations identified in the investigative report include ARS 32-2044-5, engaging in the performance of substandard care by a physical therapist assistant, including exceeding the authority to perform tasks selected and delegated by the supervising licensee, regardless of whether actual injury to the patient is established. ARS 32-2044-12, failing to adhere to the recognized standards of ethics of the physical therapy profession, and as it relates to standard 3E, physical therapist assistants shall provide physical therapist services under the direction and supervision of a physical therapist and shall communicate with the physical therapist when patient or client status requires modifications to the established plan of care. ARS 32-2044-20, failing to maintain adequate patient records, and as it relates to R4-24-303 patient care management G1, a physical therapist assistant who provides a selected treatment intervention under general supervision shall document in the patient record the name and license number of the supervising physical therapist. And R4-24-304 adequate patient records C1. For each date that a therapeutic intervention is provided to a patient, the individual who provides the therapeutic intervention shall make an entry that meets the standards in subsection A in the patient record and document the patient's subjective report of current status or response to the therapeutic intervention. Mr. Kuhlman received a copy of the investigative report, and, you know, he's on the call this morning. This matter is for your review.
Thank you. Mr. Kuhlman, would you like to make a statement?
Certainly. So this was brought to my attention, obviously, in December, since that time, and the response to the board. Via the letter I provided, I've gone through the investigation with Liz. And then on top of that, I immediately went to continuing education to document some hours so that I could provide that in the letter to provide some context for the board.
Are you willing to answer questions from the board?
Yes.
Can you first tell me what you've learned from this experience?
Yeah, certainly. So I think that having the coverage for PT is certainly important. I think that for the most part, just having documentation in line with putting the PT and the license number on there is certainly important. I think the constraints of the situation I was put in terms of utilizing telehealth and not having someone on site just put me in a difficult spot. Just moving forward, just having that supervisory presence, whether it's, you know, general supervision and then having someone a phone call away. We clearly recognized what was happening in that two-week time span to you know, rectify the differences and hire someone on or have PRN come in. But in terms of moving forward, the learning experience is obviously just maintaining the regulatory statutes that are in place, you know, abiding by the state statutes so that we can actually have, you know, whether it's telehealth or PRN or full time, just to make sure that PTAs are obviously protected.
It's my understanding that the telehealth PT that you had was not in the position to add PTAs that she could supervise. Is that correct during that time?
Yeah, I listened to the call. I think she had two PTAs on her site in Chandler, and then she was completing telehealth with myself.
So she was not in a position to supervise more PTAs?
Correct.
And you work with like a management company?
I do. We're the contract therapy company in the Haven Health locations.
And were they actively looking for a therapist to help you with this?
Certainly. So I had been actively looking for a therapist, a PT, since I joined the company in October 2nd of 23. I had pretty much been given some PRN PTs who are in the area. And, you know, it was working out. We had the contractors. And then, of course, when March 31st came, we were out of the PT contractors. So we were always actively looking for someone, hopefully local, that we could actually have on site at all times, or at least have a PT on site at all times.
Okay. So there's a couple of things going on that are very, very concerning about what happened. Certainly during this time period and maybe before and after. And I'll just start with scheduling. Were you aware before you spoke with Dr. Sinish that the PT is the one that's supposed to be determining if a PTA is appropriate to work with the patient?
Correct. I'm aware through the evaluation, yes.
And so all the patients at New Haven are seen by PTAs exclusively? I mean, other than evaluations?
I mean, if there was PRN coverage that was coming in, they would obviously see the patient if they could get to them, but they were providing the coverage for evaluations. And then the PTAs were covering the visits.
And the PTs made this determination, or you were making this determination?
Right. So once they were evaluated, I ended up putting them on the schedule.
And then how about the reevaluations or the fourth visit issue?
Right. So within outside that 2-week time frame, it was very difficult to have that fourth visit covered, or, you know, by every 30 days, whichever comes first. So without any coverage, it just made it extremely difficult for us until we got some PRN help.
I'm wondering if you could tell us about the medical director that you mentioned as a retired physical therapist and their role. The only thing I see listed is that you said that they provided a valuable resource for addressing complex cases. So this is someone that you would be reporting to then. You're director of rehabilitation and you have an on-site medical director who's a retired physical therapist. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So what items would you discuss with this individual? And would you, when you determine the schedule, did you talk with this on-site medical director?
Right. So a lot of the items in which she comes across would be pain for a patient. She can review levels very easily and then have a determination of how to proceed. Obviously, her lane is a lot different in terms of medication and what's going on with the patient medically. But in terms of collaboration with her, she can talk to me about any falls or scheduling anything for like x-ray follow-ups, things of that nature. So she was a vital resource in terms of just touching base with her basically daily. She's actually in the facility, I believe it's like Tuesday through Friday, which is a good resource to have.
And so in scheduling these patients that is falls in your job, did you consult her on this?
I would not. I would follow the frequency out of the telehealth eval.
Mr. Coleman, it's Dr. King. You mentioned that when you didn't have a PT for the fourth visit for 30 days, it made it extremely difficult. So what did you do then?
So a lot of times I would actually push visits as best as I could to get outside of this two-week window or the shortage. I actually did not do telehealth reevaluations with Carly or anybody with inside the company that's available for telehealth. So in terms of the continuation of care, I think I stated in my letter that I just continued to treat patients. At that time, the other PTA had pretty much basically quit and left after, I believe, the first week. So I was basically the one PTA left to see everyone on the schedule.
Sounds okay. I agree with Dr. Brasillo. There are multiple concerns about how this business is doing practice. And unfortunately, you're the director, so you're in front of us now, but this is really egregious and way outside, appears to be way outside of the intent of the law and our statutes and our rules about patient care, utilizing PTAs. And the role of the supervising PT is not just to sign off on charts and pop in as a PRN to do a re-eval and then pop back out so the PTAs can continue patient care. So I have
certainly
significant concerns about the way the practice is practicing and significant concerns about patient care in this facility.
Understood.
I would second that. And I guess my question is, you know, I mean, Green Valley is not that rural. It's less than a half hour from downtown Tucson. Like, there are a lot of PTs in Tucson. What were you guys doing to, and I don't know if you were involved in this, but do you know why you were having a hard time finding a physical therapist?
Yeah, so I think through the contract therapy company, HR is basically based out of Florida. So I think the picking up of buildings out in Arizona, I think it's just been a staffing shortage challenge. And just to let you know, there's a physical therapy shortage in Phoenix. So you get to a smaller pool like Green Valley, it's definitely a challenge. Not to say that we couldn't find someone. Obviously, we were looking for contractors or full-time. But then there's that PRN piece where you're just trying to grab people from Tucson. And it's just, it's tough.
And I mean, I want to understand, as the director of physical therapy, are you the director of physical therapy at just this facility, or do you have other facilities that you direct physical therapy for?
That is the only facility.
Okay. And, so you're, am I understanding correctly then that you're directly supervising all the therapy that goes on in this nursing home?
So I'm the physical therapist assistant. I'm the director of rehab for the facility.
Okay, but I guess, is there a physical therapist managing the care of all these patients, even like now?
Yes, we have someone on site.
Okay. And is it up to you to find a physical therapist to bring in to supervise those people, or who's making that decision?
Yeah, so through the hiring process, we would bring in a PT and then take it from there in terms of covering all the admits for evaluations, and then the continuation of care obviously helps significantly by having a full-time PT on site.
Okay.
Mr. Coleman, do you have a full-time PT on site?
We do.
And do you continue to schedule the patients through for the PTAs after the initial evaluation is completed?
Yes. Yeah, so once the evaluation is completed, we check with the PT and the OT or speech just for the frequency, and then that's how it's set on the schedule.
And so how many PTAs would the PT that's full-time on-site be supervising?
So as of right now, it's just two of us.
And do you have aides or techs that are also providing care for patients?
We do not, no.
Go ahead.
I just was curious what the delegation conversation looks like for that PT and each PTA every day of service for these patients.
Yeah, so it's gotten extremely better. After I put in an admission and just scheduled the PT or OT for the evaluation, once it's complete, basically by about 3 or 4 o'clock at the completion of the day, it's much easier to just review with checking in, not only with the patient to introduce myself, but then to just go over with the PT and the OT exactly what's going on, so that the frequency, whether it's 5 times a week, 3 times a week, that those 5 days of coverage are there for both disciplines. It's obviously driven patient care a lot better recently, which has made a big difference. But I would reiterate that even back in April, you know, we had the lowest return to acute out of all Haven facilities because we were, you know, staying with inside the guardrails of the plan of care coming out of the hospital. I know that you guys have a lot of concern with that, and obviously it was concerning for me, but that's because of a PT shortage or just not getting them hired on.
So then after you have the conversation with the patient and the PT and the OT evaluation, and let's say that patient's on your schedule 2 days later, what's the conversation look like with the supervising PT that day?
In terms of the progression for the patient, is that what you're referring to?
Just in terms of, is this patient still appropriate for you to be seeing them?
Correct. So if anything out of the norm, not getting out of bed or patient not transferring or change in status, we can touch base with the director of nursing. There's the doctor on site and then also the physical therapist to reassess.
So I think, and correct me if I'm understanding this incorrectly. What I'm hearing you say is once you have the conversation with the PT regarding the evaluation and the plan of care and the frequency, unless there's a change in that patient's status, you don't talk to the PT again before you're treating that patient each session?
Not necessarily, because the PT might end up with that patient on their schedule. And that would cover the fourth visit.
Right. So if they're on your schedule and it's the third visit, you wouldn't necessarily talk to the PT unless there was a change in that patient's status. Is that what you're saying?
Not necessarily. I mean, if I saw the PT and there was something that was to come up, I could absolutely bring it to the attention of the PT. I think just many hands and many eyes on a patient certainly help the progression of care for any patient.
Thank you.
So I'd like to return to maybe some time before and maybe what you're doing now in terms of progress reports. It seemed that in the past, your progress reports were being completed by the PTAs, and then the PTs were signing off on them. What's happening with that at this point?
Yeah, so just in terms of the system in which I utilize, I've gotten to the point where you can actually sign the progress note, or you can just leave it in a save status for the PT to sign off. From what I've noticed a lot of other PTAs are doing, is you can actually just pretty much save the progress note, but you don't have to sign for it, because I guess it's hard to explain, but I'll do my best. So the progress note itself, even if I were to finalize it, it still has to be signed up by a PT. But from this experience, I get to pretty much to finalize it, and I do not sign that progress note.
So you're doing tests and measures then with patients and progress notes, and then also making the assessment as to the patient progress or changes in goals, things like that?
That I do not touch. The PT who has to sign that progress note can update that information at that time.
So I guess I'm not sure I understand. Is a physical therapist like actually visiting these people, or are they reading your assessment and then signing off on your assessment and making any changes based on that?
They certainly can, but the progress notes for the system in which we utilize actually trigger every 7 days. So if they were to actually get a visit in, that would be great. But if not, then yes, they would rely on the progress note.
How, I mean, under that system, how long can a patient go without actually seeing a physical therapist? I mean, could a patient go for 7 days?
So ideally, outside of the frequency, they would be in there by the fourth visit.
Okay.
Which hopefully within that time frame would be within inside of a week, unless their frequency was really low, I guess, like at 3 and OT was at 3, for example.
Okay.
And then, yeah, that might go out a little bit further, correct?
Okay, and you're saying ideally it'll go every fourth visit. Are there situations where it's not going every fourth visit?
No, now that there's a full-time PT on staff, it's made life a lot easier.
Okay, so life is a lot easier. Is there a physical therapist doing an actual physical assessment of a patient every fourth visit?
Correct. They would be on the schedule for the actual therapist, and that covers the requirements. It's every fourth visitor, 30 days, whichever comes first, so they'd have to be seen by a PT. The PT can assess at that time.
Okay.
So that is occurring at this moment now. There's always a PT seeing the patient and doing the treatment every fourth visit?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So this is an initial review, and we're asking a lot of questions. Do we feel like we're coming to some decisions here, or do we need to move this to an informal hearing?
Dr. Bustillo, I'm leaning toward a disciplinary action. So if we're more comfortable doing that in an informal hearing, then I would move that we move this to an informal hearing.
Second.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I have a lot of concerns. I'm frankly not even super clear about how the supervision and delegation is working at this facility, but it leaves a lot of concerns. So I think an informal hearing is probably appropriate.
And there's a lot more documents that I would like to see. Like we were provided a spreadsheet of kind of how the scheduling of the PTs was working previously.
Yes.
I'd like to potentially see what that looks like now. I'd also like to know, I'm assuming when I look at this spreadsheet that when it shows that there was a supervising PT available that they were on site, I don't know that for sure.
Right.
So it really doesn't paint a picture for me of when we get to that fourth visit, does it really fall into the fourth visit rule, or was that PT on site? So it doesn't fall into the fourth visit rule. I'd like a little bit more explanation on kind of how that's looking currently.
Yeah, what did you want?
Would you like any chart reviews?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely. And including the progress notes to see who's actually putting in the information, updating the goals, all of that.
And how many would you like?
If we could review the chart that include evaluation, treatment, at least one or two fourth visits, so we can see the time frames and even a potential discharge. I hate to burn you guys, but I'm thinking at least three, if not four. Are you comfortable with that, Karen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd also like to see the audit trail, because I think one of my major concerns is that the people who are writing these evaluations are not physical therapists. So I think, because I'm still not clear about whether or not this is something that is being built out by a PTA and then kind of just checked off by a physical therapist.
Right, I agree. And considering they had vacancies from October till just recently getting a full time, I certainly question whether it was just only occurring in a 2-week period.
And that was my biggest concern, Dr. King, is like I see in the report that the struggle to have a PT was between April 1st and April 13th. But then I'm looking at these potential scheduling of the PTAs from like early March all the way through April. And I have no idea whether there was a PT on site or not.
Okay.
I mean, I asked for the charts. Do you want some from a few months back and some more recent? Is there a time frame that you would prefer?
I'm more concerned with how things are looking now. So probably
I think probably
when the changes all kind of took place.
I think both, honestly, because let's say this full-time PT quits next week. What changes in their process, right? So I'd like to see what they were doing, what they're doing now, and then we can ask them in the informal hearing, like, what's the policy? PT quits next week, what do you do? You're back to where you were.
Yeah.
So maybe just one or two closed out, or at least prior to this complaint. And then some current would be great.
Thank you.
And Ms. Seinisch, when I say audit trails, are you familiar with what I'm asking for?
If you would like to direct me, that would be great.
Okay. So the facility should be able to pull a time by time stamp version of the charting.
Okay.
That will identify when a chart was created or adjusted, and the name of the person who created or adjusted it. So it should read like a basically Excel spreadsheet that says this is what was added and this is when.
Okay.
And by who.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And then just to make sure that we're clear on what I was asking for, something similar to the spreadsheet that was in here showing 4 to 5 patients, how they were scheduled. Pretty much the same setup that's in here, but I'd also like maybe another column of whether that PT was on site or not on site.
Thanks, Giovanni.
Liz, I know that the organization that Mr. Coleman works for contracts with New Haven. Do we know the name of the company that he actually works for?
I believe it's TMC.
Thank you.
Any other direction for Liz? Okay. And we do have a motion, correct?
Formal hearing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure the motion will verbally capture all of the direction that you've given to Liz. I think I'll try to summarize it, but I'm sure Liz was taking notes as well.
Okay.
So in case 2427, Christopher Coleman, PTA, it's been moved and seconded to invite Mr. Coleman to an informal hearing and direct staff to investigate further, including current facility practice and documentation, timestamp audit trail of records creation and updates, and an additional 3 to 4 records review, both prior to the complaint and more current.
Okay.
Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes. Mr. Coleman, you will receive from the board additional correspondence inviting you to an informal hearing, and Ms. Steinish will be reaching out as well for further investigation.
Understood.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, then we will move on to 9B, Amber Rasmussen, PTA applicant.
So this case differs a little bit from typical application cases that are brought before the board, which is why it's been agendized in this manner. So the board was provided Ms. Rasmussen's application as a physical therapist assistant for licensure. And while her application was under review, she disclosed that she was pulled over for making a wide turn and was arrested for DUI on October 2nd, 2024. Ms. Rasmussen's application was in the very late stages recently. So with this disclosure, it became a matter that needed to come before the board for direction. With the disclosure itself, the documentation that we've received that Ms. Rasmussen reports to having is minimal at best. We don't have any of the arrest record or any of the documentation of the original citation. We did have, however, some vehicle documentation. I don't know if Ms. Rasmussen is on the call, but she is engaged in a legal matter with this and working with her attorney in the legal matter. She has disclosed to the board that she is not represented in the matters before the board. So, with that information, the application is brought to you because her application in itself is complete. It's just this matter then that needs to be determined. So the board is asked to review this matter and to direct staff how you would like to proceed. Some options may include, and Mr. Harris may be able to add further options, but some options may include licensing her and then opening a complaint to determine to just watch that case as it goes through. Ms. Rasmussen would also be responsible, should the board not choose to do that, she would be responsible for reporting those charges, or whenever that legal matter moves forward or resolves, she would be responsible for reporting that information to the board as well. So because of this disclosure, it takes it out of the realm of applications that have been delegated to staff to finalize. So the matter is before the board.
So if we license her and then open a complaint, do you notify her then that she's required to report, or would that be part of any communication with her?
So if the board chose to license her and to open a complaint, the licensure would be granted and then the complaint would be drafted and it would follow its normal process in terms of notifying her, giving her an opportunity to respond, gathering the evidence that she's able to produce.
Ms. Chepius, I just want to confirm, from the records, I got the impression that no charges had been filed, but that they might be filed. Are we still in that position, or have things progressed?
At this point, and perhaps Mr. Harris, you can jump in at this point. At this point, we know that she was arrested. So she has a duty to report that.
Okay.
where the legal matters stand at this point, we don't know. We don't have the documentation that indicates. It was through just direct communication with her that we found out that she was pulled over for a wide turn and then arrested. But we don't have any citation that was issued. She's been forthcoming with information when we've requested it from her. But she did not have any information to provide to us. Again, she's been working through her attorney and, I believe contacting him when the board makes these kind of, you know, requests for documentation as well. So, she may be on this call and perhaps can answer some of those questions. I don't know.
Judy, I hate to interrupt, but, I am on the call. This is Amber Rasmussen.
Thank you, Amber.
Judy or Mr. Harris, just a quick question of clarification just from me. So she's not licensed here yet. So she's still obligated to report anything to the board? She's that not is, in jurisdiction, right?
Even though she's not licensed, okay. Madam Chair, members of the board, she is an applicant. So okay. That gives us jurisdiction.
Okay.
And reporting any charges extends to both licensees and applicants.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Sure. And perhaps we can hear from the applicant and maybe mm-hmm. some update, because as Judy was describing, the information that we have so far reviewed is at best unclear where yep. things are and where things started, because they just don't seem to align. And so maybe she has some clarification on where things are right now with her traffic incident.
Ms. Rasmussen, are you able to update us as to where things are in this case with you?
Yes, I absolutely can. I know the concern of the arrest report and the police citation was brought up to everybody's concern and why that wasn't presented. Because I don't have one at this time. The arrest was a formality to do the sobriety test in the police station versus on the side of the road, which I guess they don't do that on the side of the road in the small town I was in. So that's why I don't have a arrest or a police citation, because I was never really formally cited or anything at that present moment. So I don't have those for anybody's records, unfortunately. I don't even have them for myself.
Do you have a court date or anything coming up?
No, because they still haven't cited me. So I checked with my lawyer as of yesterday. So Monday, February 24th, 2025. It was around 9 o'clock in the morning. I confirmed with my lawyer that DPS still has not brought any charges against me. So as of right now, it's nothing, unfortunately.
I don't know if it's adds anything, and Mark, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but in my experience with some of these cases, depending on the suspicion of the level of DUI, if there's a suspicion of a high level of DUI, they'll take them to the station. And depending on the outcome, it may take several months for that outcome to be identified. And then if it's high enough, they'll send it to the, MCSO for the actual charging of it. So you'll see sometimes in some of our cases, a person will be arrested. It'll go to MCSO and then it's not charged for several months. So Mark, is that kind of how some of these play out?
I think it is. And, you know, just a reminder, you know, as an applicant, let's say today you approve her application, as a licensee, if her arrest ever turns into an official charge, at that point, she would need to notify the board, and then the board would have the ability to take a look at that and do whatever it thinks is appropriate, such as opening up a complaint or taking no action. That option, though, is certainly, as Judy mentioned, available to you today. Taking action on her application, but then, you know, opening a complaint just, you know, to further look into this incident.
I guess without getting too far into the weeds, I guess the question before us now is, do we let her proceed, and then do we instruct the board to open a complaint after she's admitted? So my inclination would be yes, let's let her proceed. I don't see any charges which would be concerning enough to make me say no. So I guess I would move that we allow Ms. Rasmussen to proceed with licensure, and that if she becomes licensed, we instruct the board to bring this matter before us again for an update as to whether if further action needs to be taken via complaint.
I'll
take a third, Giovanni. That works.
There you go. Third and a fourth.
Any other discussion?
Do we need to do anything else in regard, like, are we just voting on letting her proceed, or do we need to also take no action potentially on the issue? Because my thought is, if she hasn't been charged, you know, there's not really any reason to take action on this specific issue. And then if she does get charged later on, as Mr. Harris mentioned, she would report that to the board within the 10-day period. And then at that point, we could potentially take action. But I don't know. Is there anything we need to do in regards to that?
I think it's just agendized to approve her application.
Okay.
In light of recent disclosures. So it sounds like the motion is to approve her application and then open the complaint to help keep an eye on her.
And I guess that's kind of what I'm referring to, is do we need to even open a complaint at this point, or just wait until she's charged and have her report it and then potentially open a complaint at that point?
I mean, my take on it is if we open a complaint and she's not charged, it's going to go away pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And if she is charged, then, you know, that's just one less vote we have to pick. So.
Yeah. Okay.
So do you have what we're voting on, Judy?
I believe so. So at this point, it's been moved and seconded to approve Ms. Rasmussen's application and to simultaneously open a complaint to be further investigated regarding the charges against her, or regarding any charges legally.
That's correct.
Okay. Dr. Bastillo?
Yes.
Mr. Leone?
Yes.
Dr. Hike?
Yes.
Mr. Greer?
Yes.
Mr. Barton?
Yes.
Dr. King?
Yes.
That motion passes.
Good luck with you, Ms. Rasmussen. I hope this goes away quickly for you.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Staff will be in touch with you.
Thank you.
So, Judy, do you need to restart the recording?
I think that might be a really good idea.
Would and we then like let's just take minutes? A short
5 minutes, 10 minutes?
Yep.
Which would you prefer?
Five's good with me.
Okay.
It's
10:14. The recording will stop at 10:14. The board will return after a 5-minute break. Any of you on the call may still remain in this meeting room and take your break as well. The board will return. Oh, it's 10:15 by the time I'm shutting all this down. So the board will return at 10:20.